All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is January 22nd, 2026. And our top story this morning, the markets have swung risk on, started late yesterday, with President Trump's abrupt about-face, U-turn, pivot, taco, whatever you want to call it, about Greenland. And thank you. We can finally put this ridiculous story to bed. All right. I mean, did anybody really think the United States was going to invade Greenland? Did anybody really? I mean, outside of Rachel Maddow and the art teachers, who I'm sure were literally shaking right now, you guys, outside of them, did anybody really think the United States military was going to storm the beaches of Greenland and that like 12 guys from Europe were going to put up a valiant defense? Did anybody really think that was going to happen? This story has been so stupid from the get-go. And honestly, like all President Trump had to say, because the press goaded him into this and he walked right into it like he always does. Would you rule out the use of force? All he had to say was, we're not going to invade Greenland. That's all he had to say. But he didn't say that. And so the whole world was like pearl clutching. Oh my God, Denmark's sovereignty and Greenland's independence, which they don't have, but Greenland's sovereignty. And you know what actually sorted this out? Do you know how this story was resolved? It was a meeting between President Trump and NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. All right. That's how this ended. All right. So all the European pearl clutching on Danish sovereignty. Guess what? The Danes weren't even at the meeting. The Greenlanders weren't even invited to the freaking meeting. And that's how they solved it. So yeah, here's your Danish sovereignty right here. Mark Rutte decided what happened at Greenland for the Europeans. They didn't even invite the freaking Danes. Oh my God, this story is so stupid. Thank God it's over. The United States, what are we going to do? All right, we're going to get rid of the tariffs. That's what the Europeans get. And this is how President Trump always negotiates. He creates chaos, gives himself his own leverage, and then gives it away as if he's giving the other side something. It's stupid, clumsy negotiating tactic, but hey, it works over and over again, doesn't it? On top of that, what do we get? The Golden Dome, which, okay, we were going to do that anyway. We already had military bases on Greenland. We're not getting anything. We're allowed to put our own missiles in our own bases that we already had before this silly exercise even began. Mineral investment. All right, we're going to get something like right of first refusal. They haven't worked out the details yet. We'll be somehow involved in the development of any rare earths in Greenland, which I don't even know that there's any plans for, because it's under a freaking glacier. And I don't know that we can mine underneath glaciers. I don't know of any companies that are even trying to make these investments. My God, this story is so stupid. It's over. Thank God. Moving TF on. Also going on this morning, Japan. We got some details about what's going on in Japan here. First of all, the budget surplus. What budget surplus? There ain't one. They were going to have one. They were on pace for their first budget surplus, as long as you don't count service costs on the debt, which is substantial. But if we don't count that, they were on their way to a budget surplus. That was until Sanae Takeuchi showed up. And now, thanks to her plans for stimulus spending, they are back into a deficit in Japan. And we're finally getting some details on that bond market rout in Japan that happened on Tuesday. Wait till you see just how little selling it took in Japanese government bonds to cause that monster loss in the Japanese bond market. That was a warning sign for the Japanese and the Europeans and the Americans and everybody else who's operating on this premise of endless fiscal recklessness. The bill is coming due. They are teetering on an edge in their debt market. They came really close on Tuesday. But you know what? Just like relentless optimism, keep stimmy spending. What's the worst thing that could happen, like 1923 Germany? Other than that, and I hear things went really well in Germany after 1923 for like the next 20 years anyway. So like, you know, let's just go ahead and repeat history. Sure, why not? What's the worst thing that could happen? Ubisoft, that's a big one this morning, down at 35% lower for Ubisoft. The video game maker has announced they're canceling six planned titles, including Prince of Persia, which apparently they're still making. I thought Jake Gyllenhaal killed that franchise. Apparently not. They're canceling 6 games and they're closing studios. The video game industry is apparently in big trouble. I wouldn't know. I haven't paid for a video game since like 25 years ago. But that one is moving this morning. Freeport MacMoran stock, the biggest producer of copper in the world. They reported their earnings this morning. This is an important one because copper prices are at all-time highs here. They have exploded higher along with this run in gold and silver, which copper mines also produce gold and silver. But the stock is lower after reporting fantastic earnings. Pay attention to that one because there's a lot of guys that are relentlessly optimistic about silver miners right now. And with good reason. I own some mining stocks myself. They have had a monster run here. But if you're planning on going out on leverage around this earnings season, remember a lot of that optimism is already baked into the cake. So let's look at what the market is doing after Freeport's earnings. Maybe a little bit of clue for some of my shiny mining company holders. We also got earnings from GE Aerospace and Procter & Gamble. No relation. We'll talk about them. Sam Altman is in the Middle East. The effective altruist and champion of the climate is in the Middle East trying to raise money from oil sheiks to pay for his chatbot because they can't pay their bills because they promised to spend trillions of dollars and they're burning all kinds of coal and natural gas, you know, to save the climate. Okay, that's a cool story. That's going on this morning. Good luck, Sam. Your company's dead if you don't come home with the money. On top of that, we've got China Vanke. They are still trying to work things out with their creditors who at this point know their money is gone. They're just trying to recover a couple of cents, hopefully, before it all goes kablooey. And the Chinese real estate market, this is an interesting thing, guys. Me and my moderator, Mish, we were talking about this morning in our morning call. We still don't have any resolution on Evergrande. Evergrande went bankrupt more than 3 years ago. And it's still sitting in purgatory in Hong Kong court, going nowhere, no assets getting sold, nobody getting paid back. The whole Chinese housing industry is dead, but they just won't declare time of death. That's pretty much what it boils down to. And, you know, it really resembles private equity and private credit and commercial real estate here in the States. The whole world is just pretending this shit is still worth something. The floor is price discovery. Whatever we do, we must avoid price discovery at all costs. And we've got Alibaba is in the news this morning, the Chinese tech giant. They're prepared to IPO their AI chip spinoff. Pay attention to that one because NVIDIA has put a lot of eggs in that China basket. The H200 sales that they were supposed to be clear to sell to China. And then the Chinese, once the U.S. government gave him the all clear because President Trump wants his stock bubble more than he wants his national security interests, they says, yeah, go ahead and sell the H200s to China. And then China says, yeah, we don't want them. We're worried you might backdoor those chips, you know, like we've been doing to you for decades. Yeah, the Chinese are like, no, we don't want the chips. And now Alibaba's ready to IPO their AI chip. NVIDIA's got a very narrow moat here. And it's getting smaller. You know, they've got big fat margins. They've been making money hand over fist. A lot of it, their own money coming around in a circle. But the writing is on the wall here. The competition is nipping at their heels. This AI bubble, and again, full disclosure, I'm short NVIDIA. My interests are what they are. It just feels like a matter of time. They're all in Davos this week trying to make it sound like, oh, the AI demand is so insane, even though Jensen Huang yesterday is like, all this negativity about artificial intelligence has hurt society or harmed society. Okay, says the guy who's run the biggest accounting fraud in human history. Yeah, sorry, my negativity has harmed society by calling out your BS. But hey, you do you. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today, shall we? Don't forget that like button. Don't forget that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back and have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this every single day. And that is some really good wake-up juice this morning. I need it. It is cold and miserable out, and it's about to get miserabler. But right now, the S&P 500 is up 46 points, 0.2% higher. Again, market swinging risk on. We've got the Dow is up 248 points, a 0.5% higher this morning. And the NASDAQ leading the way higher, up 246 points, nary a percent, or should I say nearly a percent higher. Good morning for stocks here up across the board. The dollar is a little bit lower at 98.59, off by 20 basis points, putting some upward pressure on asset prices. Now, We are risk on this morning, but it's a modest degree of risk on. Bond yields are moving higher. You'd expect a little bit of that. People selling bonds, moving into stocks with risk on. But you know what? It's not a very big move in bond yields here. So it's kind of tepid in its pace. The 30-year yield, 4.873. That's higher by not even a half a point. The 10-year yield at 4.265. That's about a point and a half higher. The 2-year yield is at 3.614, up by almost 2 points. And the 1 month is at 3.680, up just a fraction of a point. So not a lot of movement in bonds after some ructions in the bond market earlier this week. Looking over at Bitcoin, we're a little bit higher this morning, but again, kind of a tepid move. The market is technically risk on this morning, but just barely. Bitcoin had a little bit of a rally yesterday when President Trump had his about face on the Greenland story. 89,569 right now, higher by about $200 versus where we were yesterday. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got a mixed bag this morning. Gold is a little bit lower here, although still holding above $4,800. $4,822 for spot gold. That's up by $9 or 0.19%. February COMEX gold futures are at $48.23, higher by $14.50 or 0.3% higher. We've got my favorite of the shiny. Silver is in the green this morning after a rough day yesterday. Silver gave up a couple of bucks, but still, look at it, in the low 90s here. That's after a bad day. Silver's at 93.38, 93.40 now, up 28 cents or 0.3%. March COMEX futures at 93.33. Still got a couple of pennies of backwardation. The London spot price is still about 8 cents higher than that March COMEX future. But March COMEX futures up 72 cents or 0.78%. I like the shiny. Copper is lower by 0.33%. Platinum is higher by 0.33%. Palladium is up about 0.8%. And WTI crude is down 1.1%, $59.95 for March WTI futures. And natural gas, we'll cover that one because of this cold spell here. Natural gas futures for February, $5.30, up another 42 cents or 8.7% higher. Natural gas futures have been ripping this week. Beware the Widowmaker trade. There are those out there who are able to trade natural gas futures based on weather patterns. I am not among them. I have lost enough money trying to do that in the past. No, thank you. Good luck. If that's your bag, I'm staying out of the Widowmaker trade, though. Meanwhile, we got this one from Goldman this morning. Goldman raises year-end gold forecast to $5,400 an ounce, which isn't all that much higher from where we're at right now. It's worth pointing out. It seems like an ungodly high number, but we're almost there. Goldman Sachs Group raised its year-end gold price forecast by more than 10%. Reflecting growing private sector diversification into bullion on top of already strong demand from central banks and exchange-traded funds. The bank raised its December 2026 price target to $5,400 an ounce from a prior forecast of $49.9, which we almost hit on Tuesday, on the assumption that private investors who have bought gold as a hedge against macro policy risk will maintain those positions through the end of the year. Analyst Dan Stroyven and Lena Thomas wrote in a note on January 21st, unlike previous hedges tied to specific events, such as the November 2024 U.S. election, positions taken against perceived risks, such as fiscal stability, may not fully resolve this year and are therefore stickier, the analyst said. And thank you, Captain's Obvious there. Yes. Fiscal sustainability risks may not fully resolve this year. Really? I am shocked. I thought all the world's spending problems were going to be solved in the next 365 days. I mean, it's the biggest crisis of the last three generations, and it's probably going to lead to World War III and a global depression. Oh, yeah, they may not be fully resolved by the end of this year. Just maybe that's why gold is going higher, you think? It's also worth pointing out here, guys, that they're saying growing private sector diversification into bullion. All right, that's something I flagged in some of my interviews recently with George Noble. I've been talking about this on the channel for quite a while. I do think a major chunk of the average 60-40 portfolio out there is going to eventually read the writing on the wall. about bonds, about negative real yields not going anywhere. And I think that 40 in the 60-40 portfolio will be looking to hide out in gold because of these perceived policy risks. And that is a lot. I mean, a lot of money flowing into a very small gold space. I mean, the market cap of all gold in the world above ground is not that big, not compared to global debt markets. So if money starts leaving the debt market and heading to gold, like we saw earlier this week when gold ripped on that bond market route on Tuesday, yeah, 5,400, it seems a crazy number, but we could get there, absolutely. But on to the main one this morning, inside Trump's head-spinning Greenland U-turn. This one in the Wall Street Journal: president rules out using force to take control of Greenland. Finally, he should have done that from day one, and calls off promised tariffs on European nations. When President Trump arrived in the snow-covered Swiss Alps on Wednesday afternoon, European leaders were panicked that his efforts to acquire Greenland would trigger a transatlantic conflagration. By the time the sun set, Trump had backed down. The about-face followed days of back-channel conversations between Trump, his advisors, and European leaders, including NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte and German Chancellor Friedrich Merz. According to people close to the talks, you notice none of those names are from Greenland or Denmark. That's pretty funny. Everybody's pearl-clutching over Danish sovereignty. I don't see any Danish names in that list, but I digress. The Europeans, who stood united in their opposition to Trump acquiring Greenland, employed a mix of enticements, such as offers to boost Arctic security, and warnings about the dangers to the U.S. of a deeper rupture in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. After a meeting with Rutte on Wednesday, Trump called off promised tariffs on European nations, contending that he had formed a framework of a future deal, cautiously optimistic about hopefully one day, someday, making an actual deal. Okay, got a framework here with respect to the largest island in the world. The exact contours of the framework are still in flux, but negotiations are expected to center on several areas, including, according to officials in Europe familiar with the discussions, they include potential U.S. agreement with Denmark about stationing forces at bases in Greenland, which we already have, expanded European efforts to boost security around the Arctic, which they're already doing. The U.S. could receive a right to first refusal on investment in Greenland's mineral resources, which there are no plans anywhere in the world for anybody to do, a veto aimed at preventing Russia and China from tapping the island's wealth. Okay, so there's that. In exchange, Trump would take tariff threats off the table, which didn't exist up until a few days ago. Speaking to reporters, Trump called the framework really fantastic, but offered few details. He said he assumes Denmark, which controls Greenland, had been informed about the potential deal. Yeah, somebody tell the Danes. All right, yeah, we're all clear. Somebody let Denmark know. This story is so stupid. So what really happened after all this back and forth? We're right where we were 2 weeks ago. All the plan, no plans have changed. We created this tariff threat. It's gone. We created this imaginary threat of war in Greenland. That's gone. I mean, there's 35,000 people on the whole freaking island. So, I mean, honestly, like if a busload of tourists were to arrive in Greenland, it could be classified as an invasion because the population of the island would swell with one busload of people. This was just so stupid. Let's move on. Good God, let's move on. Japan's budget surplus plan faces further delay as Takaichi pushes spending. This is a very important story, more important than Greenland, the silly red herring or green herring over in Greenland. This is the big story this week. Japan's plan to return to a primary budget surplus for the first time in decades has been pushed back again as Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi presses ahead with what she calls a proactive fiscal policy. Yeah, helicopter money. The forecast deficit for the next fiscal year, presented at a meeting of the government's top economic council on Thursday, could be widened even further as it does not account for Takaichi's election promise to suspend an 8% tax on food for 2 years. The primary budget balance, which excludes new bond sales and debt servicing costs, is a key gauge of the extent to which policy measures can be funded without resorting to debt. The latest projection shows a primary budget deficit of 800 billion yen. That's about $5 billion. For year 2026, starting in April, compared with an earlier forecast of a 3.6 trillion yen surplus, a reversal driven largely by 21.3 trillion yen in stimulus spending under Takaichi that was launched late last year. Helicopter money in Japan, sending them back into the red. That sets the table for this story. Good God, this title, Honestly, guys, this should terrify people if they really understood what this headline really means. This should be. This is way worse than this imaginary threat of war in Greenland. Japan bond wipeout was triggered by just $280 million of trading. That seems like a lot of money to you or me, guys, but in the context of sovereign bond markets, that is a drop in the bucket. And that's all it took to crash the Japanese bond market earlier this week. Oh my God, Japan is hanging by a thread here. It took just $280 million of trading to push Japan's $7.2 trillion government bond market into meltdown. That was the combined turnover for the country's benchmark ultra-long maturity bonds as they plummeted on Tuesday, unleashing a $41 billion wipeout across the Japanese curve that sent shockwaves through global markets. The rout pushed yields to record levels, stoked worries that Japan was heading into a Liz Truss moment, and led U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent to seek reassurances for what he called a six standard deviation move. The disconnect between the size of the wipeout and the amount that actually traded shows how Japan's sometimes illiquid bond market has become a weak spot in the global financial system. And that statement is just the understatement of the year. Yeah, sometimes Japan's bond market is illiquid. Japan doesn't really have a bond market anymore, guys. Japan has a central bank that monetizes government debt. And there's a couple of people out there that are still trading these things. And when a few of them sold a few hundred million dollars worth of bonds, the whole market crashed. Subdued for years by the Bank of Japan's massive stimulus, the world's third largest pile of government debt is now increasingly vulnerable to shocks after the central bank and domestic life insurers pulled back. Remember that yen carry trade, guys. What we saw earlier this week was not the unwind of the yen carry trade, but the unwind of the yen carry trade could exacerbate this problem, and this problem could exacerbate the yen carry trade, and both of those would be a big problem for United States asset prices because a lot of those assets have been bid up with money that was borrowed in Japan. Pay attention, man. What happened this week in Japan was significant, way more significant than this stupid red herring in Greenland. I mean, look at the move. It's come to its senses in the last couple of days, but look at the size of the move in the 40-year Japanese government bond yield over just 2 days. Now, we've gapped down over the last 2 days. Gaps tend to fill. We're right back to pretty much where we opened up on Monday, still higher than we were at the end of last week. But it took just $280 million of selling to get us there. That should terrify bond investors in Japan, all three of them. Jesus. All right. Meanwhile, we've got UBS. Shares plummet 33% after Assassin's Creed maker unveils reorganization and cancels six games. Tough day for the video game maker. Ubisoft shares plunged 33% on Thursday morning after the maker of the Assassin's Creed video game announced a major organizational shakeup alongside plans to shut studios and axe six games. The changes come following years of stock price decline following COVID after delays to major releases and financial struggles. The company said it expected to make an operating loss of around €1 billion, $1.17 billion U.S., in the financial year ending 2026, following a €650 million write-down caused by the restructure. It would consider selling assets, which looks inevitable here, Ubisoft said in a statement Wednesday evening. Today's market environment requires the group step changes how it's organized and operates, said Yves Guillemot, founder and CEO of Ubisoft, in a statement. This one, yikes, now down 37.75% on the day, down 60.8% over the last year, down 95% over the last 5 years. This one's going to end up being bought out by a rival, or they'll just break it up into pieces and sell off some of their IP. This stock is dead money here. All right, let's talk about this one. This is an important one. Freeport McMoRan stock falls on earnings. Rising copper and gold prices weren't enough. There is borderline euphoria in the silver mining space right now and the whole precious metal space. And look, much of that is well-deserved. Stackers have been patient. It's good to see prices moving higher. But let's not get over our skis here, guys. Take a look at what happened with Freeport McMoRan, because copper prices went through the roof and these guys make copper along with gold and silver. And well, earnings were good, but not good enough. Shares of Freeport-McMoRan fell Thursday after the copper and gold miner reported better than expected quarterly earnings and revenue. They posted adjusted earnings of 47 cents a share for the fourth quarter, surpassing analyst consensus estimates of 29 cents. All right, so this wasn't just a beat. This was a massive beat, 47 cents versus 29. Revenue totaled $5.63 billion, down slightly from $5.72 billion last year, but well ahead of Wall Street's call for $5.29 billion. So a big beat on revenue, but down for the year. I'm guessing that's due to some of these mine disruptions that we've seen around the world. That's probably hurt their revenue numbers, but their margins blew out because those mine collapses also contributed to sharply higher copper prices. The company benefited from elevated copper and gold prices. Average realized prices in the fourth quarter were $5.33 per pound for copper and $4,078 per ounce for gold, up from $4.20 and $26.27 per ounce, respectively, last year. Just blowing out their margins here. And yet the stock fell in pre-market trading as of Wednesday's close. The stock had risen 19% this year and 55% over the last 12 months. Its closing price on Wednesday was the highest since January of 2011, according to Dow Jones data. So the point is here, guys, a lot of this was baked into the cake. Okay, now the opening bell has not yet rung. Freeport-McMoRan, it's kind of treading water here. It was green a second ago. Now it's down 0.1%. It was a percent and a half lower at one point this morning. The point is, guys, it had already had its run when earnings came along. And so when you've already had your big run into earnings, sometimes blowing away earnings, which Freeport just did. I mean, this was a blowout earnings report, but it wasn't enough to send the stock higher. And when you look over the last year, it's up 50.3%. You can see. Right? A lot of silver miners have had this same move. So just be careful here, guys. If you're out there piling in the call options ahead of earnings, it's not an automatic here. A lot of this optimism is already priced in. All right. We also got earnings from Procter & Gamble. The headline pretty much tells the whole story here. Let's not spend too much time on P&G here. Procter & Gamble growth stalls with U.S. government shutdown, hurting sales. There was also declines in food aid, they're saying, may have contributed to some of the decline in sales. Procter & Gamble did post a beat, but the stock, okay, now it's up a percent and a half. It was down a percent and a half earlier. $148.34 for Procter & Gamble, up by $2.31. Now, this one's a little more interesting. GE Aerospace rises after beating Q4 expectations and upbeat guidance. This is the maker of jet engines. GE Aerospace reported its fourth quarter results on Thursday, topping consensus expectations for earnings and revenue. The company posted Q4 adjusted earnings per share of $1.57, exceeding estimates of $1.43, while revenue came in at $11.87 billion, surpassing estimates of $11.2 billion. The strong performance represents a 19% increase in adjusted EPS and 20% growth in adjusted revenue compared to the same quarter last year. Looking ahead, GE Aerospace provided fiscal 2026 EPS guidance of $7.10 to $7.40 a share, with the midpoint of $7.25 coming in above analyst consensus of $7.12, so it was a good guide. The company cited strong momentum in both its commercial and defense segments, with commercial engine deliveries up 25% in 2025, including record LEAP deliveries increasing 28%, while defense deliveries rose 30%. All right, so this is a story about defense stocks, and this is a story about Boeing, is what's going on with GE Aerospace. Boeing, there's been a lot of hints that the worst may be behind the company, thank God, and they're starting to see their deliveries increase. They're starting to up their order sizes. GE Aerospace makes the engines for those Boeing planes, so they're seeing the benefits. And, of course, as the world steamrolls towards World War III, GE Aerospace also has a lot of defense contracts, so they're seeing the benefit on both sides of their business. That stock, though, look at this, down 4.5% here. The opening bell has rung. WTF, mate, what's going on? Did they say something on their earnings call or perhaps another case of optimism baked into the cake? The stock is already up 69.9% over the last year. So maybe just another case of good isn't good enough, because that was a great report from GE Aerospace. Stock's getting clobbered this morning. Meanwhile, OpenAI's Altman meets Mideast investors for $50 billion round. This guy just loves to fight for the climate, but man, he'll sure take oil money, won't he? Anything to keep his chatbots powered. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman has been meeting with top investors in the Middle East to line up funding for a new investment that could total at least $50 billion, according to people familiar with the matter. Altman recently visited the region where he spoke with investors, including some of the leading state-backed funds in Abu Dhabi, said the people who spoke on condition of anonymity, as the information is not public. The ChatGPT maker is looking to raise $50 billion or more in the round at a valuation of $750 to $830 billion, the people said. The talks are early and the amount could change. OpenAI has also recently held talks with Amazon to raise at least $10 billion. So look, OpenAI, they last raised money at a $500 billion valuation. And since doing that, they have asked the government for a bailout. The government pretty much told them to go pound sand. And then they're like, no, we didn't ask for a bailout when we asked for a bailout. You all heard us ask for a bailout. But no, why would you think we're asking for a bailout? Gaslighting. Okay, since Uncle Sam is off the list as far as where are we going to get money to keep this bubble inflated, why not go beg the oil sheiks for money? And all I can tell you is, why would they do this? I mean, the writing is on the wall here. OpenAI is arguably the third or fourth best product now in the space. Google is eating their lunch. What does this company have? What do the oil sheiks really want here? Well, I have to wonder. You know what they do want? They do want things like F-35s. They do want things like missiles. And although Sam Altman doesn't have those things, Sam Altman does have the ear of a certain political leader in the United States who likes to take photo ops with this guy, even though they probably hate each other politically or personally. President Trump wants his stock bubble to stay inflated. And so he maybe can't fund directly this stock bubble because he'd have to go through Congress, but he can provide favorable treatment to countries in the Middle East. And then those countries can give Sam Altman all the money he needs to keep the stock bubble inflated. That's one possible way that this bubble marches along for another 6 months to a year, is if government money, either U.S. government or Middle Eastern government money, somehow floods in and just goes into the incinerator, because that's what it's doing. It's going up in smoke. It's never going to turn a profit. The losses at this company are getting bigger, not smaller. But there's that one. Meanwhile, Ivanka leaves creditors guessing on plans as restructuring looms. Still nothing resembling price discovery in the Chinese market. We have been talking about the collapse of the Chinese real estate development market since 2021. These companies have all gone bankrupt. Ivanka's like the last man standing, and still none of it has been sold off. It's really amazing how long they have just kicked the can down the road in China here. China Ivanka, which is preparing a plan for the restructuring that would be one of the nation's biggest ever, is leaving creditors grappling for clarity on how it will deal with more bonds due in the months ahead. Representatives of Ivanka shared few details in online meetings Wednesday when asked by bondholders about the company's plans for notes that it hasn't yet asked to delay paying, people familiar with the matter said. The company was one of China's biggest builders before succumbing to a years-long crisis in the property sector. So what's happening here is China Ivanka is telling its bondholders for the notes that they're already late on. They're saying, hey, we want to work out a deal to extend this. And the bondholders are saying, well, you have more bonds coming due next month or later this year before we agree to a delay. How are you going to pay for those bonds before you even talk about how are we ever going to see our money back? And Ivanka's like, well, we don't know. That's pretty much the answer here. During the meetings on Wednesday, Ivanka reiterated that it would be able to make the 40% upfront payments and said the company had received support and guidance from local governments and its major state-owned shareholder, Shenzhen Metro Group, for the plan, the people added. So the government is giving them money to buy time to avoid default, which they're basically in already. Now, this is kind of interesting because the former head of China Ivanka went missing a few months ago. And Shenzhen Metro seemed like they were going to tell the company to go pound sand and not give them money. Now it looks like they are getting some of that money from the local government. The builder's revised proposals with the cash repayment sweeteners were a reversal from its earlier stance when it had appeared to struggle even with the interest payments. The offers also came as a surprise to credit markets, sending its dollar notes surging 50% within a few days, though they are still deeply distressed, trading at around 25 cents on the dollar. So even after a 50% rally, they're still trading at just 25 cents on the dollar. Guys, this money is already gone. It's just a matter of how many pennies on the dollar can their creditors claw back. And the worst case scenario for these creditors is they end up like Evergrande, where the company goes bankrupt and then the court just delays 6 months at a time, 9 months at a time, a year at a time for years and years and years, just keeps it in legal limbo and their money is just stranded there. Whatever comes out of this, no price discovery anytime soon in Chinese real estate. And last one of the morning, Alibaba reportedly lining up AI chip IPO after a wave of Chinese offerings. Got one eye on NVIDIA as I tell this story. Alibaba shares were rallying in pre-market trade after a report the Chinese tech giant may float its chip-making unit called T-Head, or maybe Feed if you're in a hurry. I just throw that out there. T-Head, founded in 2018, produces an AI inference chip called the Hangguang 800 that the company says is used in some of its other divisions, including Alibaba Cloud, Tmall, and Alimama. Bloomberg reported that T-Head last year signed a contract with China Unicom. Alibaba has its own ChatGPT-like AI large language model called Qwen that is the most downloaded open source model. So look, I don't know anything about these chips. I don't know if they're any good. All I do know is every chip maker in the world is gunning for NVIDIA right now. NVIDIA has high hopes for selling chips to the Chinese. Chinese don't seem to want them, and now one of the biggest Chinese tech conglomerates is about to IPO their own chip spinoff. Can't be that good for NVIDIA. Alibaba stock up 4.9% on this news, trading at this is Alibaba ADRs here in the U.S., trading at $177, up pretty big this morning, now 5% higher. And I just want to say thank you very much to Richard Bell, R1H, who says Trump $1 trillion, man, who said politics does not pay BOP. Trump's trillion, what is that talking about, the $1 trillion man? Is that, were we going to, I heard $700 billion was what we were offering to buy Greenland from, of mostly printed money, which would devalue the existing holdings of U.S. dollars over in Europe. So basically paying them with their own inflated away currency. What else could the $1 trillion refer to? Maybe the $1.5 trillion defense budget, which I heard was being was reiterated again this morning. You guys remember when we were talking about cutting spending about a year ago? Remember the whole Doge thing? And I remember Hegseth said, like, we're going to cut defense spending by 5% a year for 8 years or something. And now a year later, we're talking about a $1.5 trillion defense budget, which would be a 50% increase in spending this year. It's almost like nobody was ever serious about cutting spending. And then we look over at gold at $4,800 an ounce. And we look at Goldman's target of $5,400 an ounce this year. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, just maybe the world's fiscal policy problems won't be solved this year. Just maybe. Way to go out on a limb there, Goldman Sachs. Good God. Thank you very much, Richard, for supporting the channel, sir. And thank you to Metal Seer, who gifted 5 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you so much, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. And welcome to you 5 new baby melons. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Just a reminder, guys, for all you YouTube members, you get 1 free super chat every month. Use those and I will read and respond to your questions, thoughts, comments, concerns live on the air. Thanks a lot, Metal Seer, guys. Be sure and say thank you to Metal Seer, as I will now say thank you to you guys for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out, should you feel so inclined. Thank you, Richard and Metal Seer, for supporting the channel and the Super Chats. Thank you as well to my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. You guys are awesome. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.